All right, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and this is the Games and Rants show, which is our solo show without DP. Basically, we're just going to cover the remaining articles, and I'm going to do some rants, as usual. But first, let's go ahead and talk about our sponsor, SpinningRobotPussy.com. You can get one of those for your holiday, pleasures or whatever. I mean, I have ED right now, so it doesn't really do much for me. But if you don't have ED, you may find it quite enjoyable, and hopefully you'll like it. Also, we've got SpinningRobotPussy.com/eyes if you want to have follow me eyes for your doll that'll follow you around. You can go to SpinningRobotPussy.com/eyes and get some of those. Now, I tried these on one of my heads because obviously my doll, her eyes were glued in. So I couldn't really just take them out and mess up the glue and all that. So I had to use another head that I had laying around. And I basically tested the eyes out. And again, the pupil is far back. So I don't know if you guys like that. Some of you might like the pupil being up front. But it's to the back. But it does create the following kind of thing. Where you move your head to the right, the eyes will move to the right. You move your head to the left and move the head, you know, the eyes will move to the left. That sort of thing. So it's really interesting. And Revy sent me a pair to try out. So go to SpinningRobotPussy.com/eyes. And if that sounds like something you'd be into. And I had no issue with the quality, by the way. There's no issue with the quality. Everything was very kosher. The eyes looked good. There's several different varieties of eyes. I had no problem with it. Again, though, the pupil is to the back of the eye, not the front. So some of you might not like that. But if that seems like something you'd be into, then, again, check that website out and go ahead and grab some Follow Me Eyes. Okay, now, let's go on and talk about today's rant, which happens to be about my health because I went and saw the doctor. Yes. Okay, so I went and saw the doctor. I actually saw two doctors. I saw one online, and then I saw one in person. And I saw the first doctor online, and she basically told me that she thought that the tickling in my chest and the cough was a seasonal allergy kind of thing, and just to take Claritin. So I did, and it did clear up. I'm not nearly as coughy, I'm not coughing all over the place or anything like I was. But, I did handle that, and then I went and I called up the place that I usually go, my clinic, and I saw my doctor, and I told my doctor everything that's been going on with my anxiety and all that, and she thinks that a lot of it is anxiety. She thinks that the acid reflux and GERD is actually part of the anxiety, even though, you know, I had been on those PPIs, and taking those PPIs did kind of ruin me. I don't think you need to be on PPIs for heartburn if you don't really have an issue. A lot of people take those things, and I think they end up with the GERD. So if you like to eat the things that you like to eat, don't fucking take the PPIs. When I say PPI, I mean Nexium. I mean Prilosec. I mean, what is it? Omeprazole, which people take. That stuff there, if you take it for long enough, or even just a little bit, it can change the way your stomach acid works. Because basically what I was doing, and I didn't know this at the time, is I was taking, I was taking they're not even antacids, they're proton pump inhibitors, which they literally stop the fucking stomach from producing acid. So what happens when you eat acidic foods and you have a stomach that has no fucking acid? Well, it causes problems. It would have been better if I just stuck to my Tums or tried Gaviscon, but no. I said, it'll heal what damage I've made with, you know, commercials and stuff, and I shouldn't be paying attention to those. I should be following my gut, as it were. And I took those things, and not that many. And it was over September, you know, a little bit here and there. I wasn't like going full daily treatment, but I was taking a lot of them. And then, of course, I took that Nexium, and that Nexium did mess me up pretty bad. So I don't recommend even one Nexium. Please, if you have heartburn, take a Tums, take a Rolaids, use Gaviscon, Mylanta, anything like that. And herbal remedies. There's all kinds of herbal remedies out there for heartburn and things like that, which will probably be a lot better and safer for you. Yes, Gaviscon is made from natural ingredients. So, you know, look that up. But go ahead and try those. And if your heartburn doesn't improve, go see your doctor. Because then you might have a condition and you will probably end up like me. So, what does this entail? Well, first of all, it's a lot of unintended weight loss. I've lost a lot of weight in the past couple days, folks. It's not cool. I'm not crazy about it. But I'm not freaking out. Because I'm like, okay. Well, I'm going to make do with this. And I'm going to change my diet up a little bit. Since I can't eat the starchy stuff. Well, I mean, I can't eat the pizzas and stuff like that I would normally eat, like a lot of the poorly processed stuff. I'm going to switch it up for what another friend of mine said that had this, meat and potatoes. There's a lot of meat that you can get that you just don't even have to, like, I mean, I'm not really one to cook in the morning, but I can boil the chicken. I can have boiled chicken. I can have greens and all kinds of different vegetables, and I can have potatoes. And they'll put weight on you. You eat stuff like that, you'll definitely get some weight. And I'll take some Ensure with the protein. They have Ensure Plus, which put protein on me. Or not protein, but weight on me. And of course, I do have a protein powder that I probably could be taking. And didn't really think about that till just now. So there's a lot of different things that I can do. But the main thing that really I need to address before we go on to our articles is I did have rebound reflex. Reflux. Oh, yes. It is a monster. Feels like your stomach is literally just... it's like some guy said, okay, we're going to raise the fucking gate, or the sluice gate, and all the acid just pours in. Oh, it's hell. So I talked to my doctor about it. I was actually going to rebound while I was in the office. And she told me, does Tums work for you? I said, yeah, usually just take those. She says, well, you know, you can take those. I want you to take those. And she said, apple cider vinegar. She said, what about apple cider vinegar? She says, I know that you like natural stuff. So maybe you'll like that, trying that. And the betaine HCL, or the super enzymes I take, that is also around the same thing as... apple cider vinegar. Now, I was afraid apple cider vinegar would be too acidic and it would really make things worse. But that's the same thing I said with the super enzymes. I took one of those and I was expecting to just have absolute fucking just not even be able to do the show. That's not what happened. What happened is everything chilled the fuck out, and basically I was able to go ahead and have another meal, which I had some frozen veggies and a piece of bread. You know, I'm just testing things. I didn't mean like, I had a bowl of frozen veggies. You know, and when I get done with this, I'll probably have the rest of those frozen veggies. I don't have any meat right now. So when I go to work, I'm going to buy some meat and make sure to eat that. Definitely want to get meat back in my system. Meat is like very important to me because I eat a very chicken-based, meat-based diet. And if I just gotta boil chicken and eat bland fucking chicken every day, then damn it, I will do it. Because, yeah, I like feeling energy. I like feeling that, enzyme from the meat. And it doesn't seem like this stuff is gonna hurt it too much. Now, I have a fair amount of heartburn, but it's not even something you would really consider to be an issue. It's just a slight, even almost non-noticeable amount of pain. But I will tell you, I got really worried, and that's what led to all this, because when I woke up, because one thing, you know, you're waking up and you're everything's on fire, no matter how many Tums you took. When I woke up, I was in pain everywhere, guys. Back pain, arm pain. I thought I had the fever, like, cause that's usually fever symptoms, right? So I went and I basically checked my temperature, and I was 98.7, so it was good, or 97.8, something like that. So, okay, it's not a fever. So then I went and I said, well, let's try the, like I said, the betaine, and then I went and I ate some some veggies, and it was good. Now, you're supposed to take the betaine with every meal, but I'm not going to take it with every meal. I'm going to take it in the morning and at night. I think that's going to be good for me. Just take it during that first meal and take it during that last meal. Because I'm a really small guy, so I don't need to constantly take all this stuff all the time. It's probably going to overkill. So I'm just going to do it like that. And so far, you know, I've eaten two meals on the stuff, and I have not had any issues with them. So that's just what I'm going to do, and I'm glad I've got it. I'm definitely going to buy more. It's called Now Super Enzymes. You can get it at Amazon, and it sells pretty good. They had some issues with the packaging, with the stuff at one point, but now it seems to work. I don't know. I like it. So, I'm glad that is working. I'm going to try to get some of these visual novels and hentai done. Just because I have ED doesn't mean you do. Like, I don't give a shit. Like, hopefully it'll come back. It would be nice, you know? I'm only 36. But I think a lot of it could be anxiety related. A lot of it could be related to not just diet, but there's a lot of things. Because I had like a little hint here and there. It's like it's not over yet, but you know we'll see. We'll try to get things back in that area, which sucks because you know you can't coom. So yeah, kind of sucks a little bit. Might not be bad, but I'm on NoFap. And I didn't even want to be. But, alright, guys. Well, that's enough of that. Let's go on ahead and talk about our articles. Let's see. Oh, no. I would rather do, like, Frog46 says, boiled meat is gross. Oh, I love it. Bake it, cook it in a pan, anything but boiled. You can just reheat it in the morning. Oh, no, I like boiled meat. I boil the chicken all the time. I've got no issue with that at all. And just put it in there and boil it. I used to eat boiled meat all the time. I'm not baking it. I'm not doing anything like that. Just taking a bunch of chicken breasts and boiling them. Yep, it's how Mexicans make their shredded chicken. Okay, that's what Hoshioni says. Boiled chicken can work great. It's how Mexicans make their shredded chicken. Okay, that's cool. All right, well, boiled and spiced, I can't have that. Spices might tear me up. Now, according to what one of the guys on Amazon said, I might be able to eat spicy food with this, but let's not do that right now. Like, I just started, you know. I'm trying to get meat weight back on me. So, we're just gonna, you know, play it by ear. Definitely buying the chicken, definitely buying the potatoes, buying some frozen vegetables tomorrow. And, we're gonna do it like that. It's bland. It's not that big. But, hey, like, I just want sustenance. Seasons of some sort of... Oh, yeah, chicken... Oh, I can have soups, too. I can definitely have, they told me to get low sodium. DP did say low sodium. But yeah, low sodium, if that's possible, I'll get some low sodium chicken soup and stuff like that. And that should fill me up. But I have to eat small meals every so often rather than just a big meal. So that's a little bit different. And I'm also going to try the Ensure Plus, like I said. Meats are scientifically proven to not taste as good. But I don't care how it tastes. I really don't care. Like, that's my point. It's just to eat for sustenance at that point. To keep myself going. We'll see how I fare. Because, guys, I forgot to mention. It's a good thing you guys said all this. But, I also have... 2 weeks. Because I cannot take a PPI at all. Which I don't want to. But I can't take one literally. Because I'm supposed to do an H. pylori test in 2 weeks. Matter of fact, the doctor said she could have had me do one today. But it was too short a time since I took my last PPI, because I took that Nexium. And I don't know how long it's been since that Omeprazole either. But considering I haven't taken one in about 4 or 5 days, they have me coming in on, I think, the 3rd of January for that deal. So I'm going to go ahead and do that. And if it's something bad, they said, oh, if you want an endoscopy, yeah, we can definitely go ahead and get an upper endoscopy done. She told me the name of the gastroenterologist that would be doing it, and figure out if you have that. And I said, you think I have Barrett's esophagus? She says, you're too young for that. But she did say, she basically said that, yeah, they'll test all that. They'll make sure, you know, see what's going on with me. And of course, this will be after I've done my diet for a few days. So we'll see if I'm gaining weight. And of course, I went down. I was down 145. I weighed like 160. I weigh 145 now. So I've lost like 20, good bit of weight. So what I want to do is build that back up. Now, I know some of that weight was actually due to the fact that I wasn't eating as much generally because of my shift change. So I wasn't eating really big meals to begin with. I wasn't eating my big meals, so I knew I was going to lose some weight. But losing much more weight than that, that's not what I was planning on. So I've got to, you know, get it back up again. We'll see how that works, you know, and meat and potatoes and greens seem like it'll work. So that's what we're doing. All right, so let's get on with it. It is going to be in the article. Okay. So we'll start with the first one that we didn't get to. All right. Why are so many people going blind after getting the COVID-19 vaccine? Since the first COVID-19 vaccine was authorized for use in the United Kingdom and administered... Oh, what is this? Okay, yeah, the expose. Okay. And administered on the 8th of December 2020, there have been hundreds of thousands of adverse reactions reported to the MHRA yellow card scheme. But there is one particular adverse reaction which is both concerning and strange, and the number of people suffering from it is increasing by the week. Blindness. Ouch. The MHRA yellow card scheme analysis point for the Pfizer-BioNTech mRNA jab. Oh, by the way, they did ask if I wanted a vaccine. I told them, no, I'm good. Shows that since the first jab was administered on the 9th of December 2020 and up to December 8th, 2021, 132 people have reported suffering blindness due to the injection. Another 6 people have also reported central vision loss, with a further 3 people have reported sudden vision loss. Oh, whilst a further 3 people have reported sudden vision loss. 15 people have also reported an adverse reaction known as a blindness transient due to the Pfizer vaccine. This is where a person suffers visual disturbance or loss of sight in one eye for seconds or minutes at a time. And a further 6 people have reported an adverse reaction known as unilateral blindness. This is where a person is blind or has extremely poor vision in one eye. In total, there have been 6,682 eye disorders reported as adverse reactions to the Pfizer jab as of 8th December of 2021. The AstraZeneca viral vector injection has also caused hundreds of people to go blind. As of December 8th, the MHRA has received 306 reports of blindness. Oh my god! 3 reports of central vision loss, 5 reports of sudden vision loss, and 26 reports of blindness transient among 14,448 eye disorders reported as adverse reactions to the jab. The Moderna mRNA injection, which was first administered in June, has the lowest number of injections administered in the UK, has also caused several people to suffer blindness. As of 8th December of 2021, the MHRA have received 19 reports of blindness and 34 reports of visual impairment as adverse reactions to the Moderna injection. In all, when including adverse reactions reported where the brand of vaccine was not specified, there have been 22,060 eye disorders reported as adverse reactions to the COVID-19 injections, with 461 of these reactions being complete blindness. Now, fact-checkers alongside authorities have been on the case to sweep this data under the carpet and have labeled it as unreliable. The reason is that just because someone reports the event after having the vaccine, it doesn't necessarily mean it is due to the vaccine. But what they're not telling you is that it also doesn't necessarily mean it is not due to the vaccine, and we imagine every single person who has reported an adverse reaction would disagree with the fact-checkers and authorities' attempts to play down these reports. For instance, one person who goes by the name of Lewis has been documenting the story of his wife on Twitter since she had the AstraZeneca COVID vaccine. Unfortunately, his wife went completely blind in her left eye and 30-60% blind in her right eye after having the AstraZeneca jab, and the neurologist treating her categorically told her not to have the second dose. It says here, Lewis, no improvement, 19 days steroids, 55 days blind, 59 days since the AstraZeneca vax. 100% blind left eye, 30 to 60% blind right eye, 2 CT scans, 1 MRI another Friday, 3 ophthalmology another 2 weeks, 2 opticians, 1 lumbar puncture, and dozens of bloods. Wow. As you can see, the misery which fact-checkers are disregarding is not necessarily the fault of the vaccine is very real for people reporting them. But why are COVID vaccines causing people to go blind? Well, there's another extremely concerning reaction that has been reported to the MHRA yellow card scheme, which is one which has seen an astronomical increase in the number of reports in the past few weeks. Stroke. As of 8th December of 2021, the MHRA has received 652 reports of stroke due to the Pfizer mRNA injection, which is now the primary booster jab being administered to Brits. These reports include 14 reports of subarachnoid hemorrhage, which is an extremely rare type of stroke, 48 reports of cerebral hemorrhage, 55 reports of isochymic stroke, and 414 reports of cerebrovascular accidents. Sadly, these 652 reported strokes have resulted in 47 deaths. Unfortunately, the AstraZeneca vaccine has also caused hundreds of strokes. Up to 8 December of 21, the MHRA has received 2,193 reports of stroke as adverse reactions to the jab, resulting in 154 deaths. The 2,193 strokes include 180 cerebral hemorrhages, 114 subarachnoid hemorrhages, supposed to be rare, 156 isochemic strokes, and a shocking 1,275 cerebrovascular accidents. It says, oh man, look at them all. It's crazy. But what does that have to do with people going blind? Well, this helpful fact sheet provided by, okay, then they explain the fact sheet there. According to the fact sheet, around one-third of stroke survivors suffer visual loss and most sadly never recover their vision. What you need to know, about one-third of stroke survivors experience vision loss. Most people who have vision loss after a stroke do not fully recover their vision. Some recovery is possible. This will usually happen in the first few months after a stroke. Training equipment and home modifications can help you to live as independently and safely as possible. Vision loss after stroke. Your vision depends on a healthy eye to receive information and a healthy brain to process that information. The nerves in the eye travel from the eye to the brain, from the eye through the brain to the occipital cortex at the back of the brain, allowing you to see. Most strokes affect one side of the brain. Nerves from each eye travel together in the brain, so eyes are affected. If right side of your brain is damaged, the left side vision in each eye may be affected. It is rare for both sides of the brain to be affected by stroke. When it does happen, it can result in blindness. The reason strokes cause blindness is that vision depends on a healthy eye to receive information and a healthy brain to process that information. The nerves in the eye travel from the eye through the brain to the occipital cortex at the back of the brain, allowing you to see. Most strokes affect one side of the brain. Nerves from each eye travel together in the brain, so both eyes are affected. If the right side of your brain is damaged, the left side vision in each eye may be affected. It is rare for both sides of the brain to be affected by stroke. When it does happen, it can result in blindness. So if you've been wondering how on earth the experimental COVID vaccines could cause a person to go blind, you now know why. It's a vast amount of strokes the COVID injections are causing that is contributing to the devastating and life-changing adverse event. Strokes will not be the only contributing factor, of course, but the numbers suggest they are most likely the main adverse reaction at fault. With a national campaign to administer a third jab to millions of Brits within the space of a few weeks, we dread to think how many more people will have to suffer the life-debilitating condition of blindness due to an experimental injection that does not work and makes the recipient worse, according to the UK government's own data. Wow. That's scary, isn't it? Pretty damn scary. Now you have to worry about going blind from the shot, from the jab. That is pretty scary. You know, right now I'm going through all these digestive issues. Could you imagine blindness on top of that? Oh my god. Okay. Male online. Of course it's female. Agony of being a 50-50 mum. Women once held the upper hand in custody battles. Now fathers are winning equal access and mothers are struggling to cope. Nicola Hewitt, 42, an office manager from Kenley, Surrey, faces the trauma of being without her children, Devon and Sonny, 8, every weekend. Veronica Sweeney Bird, a 33-year-old bar worker from Tunbridge Wells, a week-on, week-off shared care arrangement for her two daughters. Okay. Mothers are having to divide time with their children equally with their exes. Every mother lives for those small, joyful moments when her child masters something new, a book once too challenging, the telling of a joke previously stumbled over. a food devoured that had formerly been rejected. For it's in the gentle minutiae of a little one's life that you really see their budding personality grow. Imagine then the agonizing pain of being privy to your child's life for only half the time. The milestones missed, the lost cuddles before bedtime, the long nights spent wondering if they're sleeping sweetly or crying out for mummy. This is the reality of Britain's growing legion of 50-50 mothers who divide their time with their children equally with their exes. It's a growing phenomenon on the surface that might seem the fairest way for separated parents to organize their lives. But it comes at the emotional price for the mothers involved, and yet the consequences for children are as yet untold. Veronica Sweeney Bird is one such mother who wishes more than anything that her two little girls were having a more relaxed, stable childhood. Instead, every other Thursday, she drops one off at nursery and one off at primary school, four for boating, as she kisses them goodbye. A week-on, week-off shared care arrangement with her husband is the high price Veronica has to pay for her broken marriage. And 2 years from the split, she still struggles to cope with the moment she says goodbye to her girls for 7 long days. I so hate being a 50-50 mother, says the 33-year-old bar worker from Tunbridge Wells, who was married for 7 years. When it's not my week to have the children, I have to try to switch off from being a mom, and it's so very hard. Nicola looks after her... Nicola looks after her children during the week, meaning she must deal with school runs and tired evenings, whereas her husband gets them at the weekend. To distract myself from the pain, I throw myself into work, working all the hours I can to keep me occupied. When they're not here, I daren't even go into the girls' room because just seeing all their clothes and toys is very painful. I know I'll just dissolve into tears and won't be able to function. Veronica only ventures into their room the night before they are due home to tidy up and get ready for their return. I know they're coming back, so I feel more excited than upset and can handle it, she says. Wow. Nicola finds holidays and special days especially hard, such as Mother's Day and her birthday. She also finds that children can be needier and more attention-seeking after having been away from her. Although her ex-husband lives just a 10-minute walk away, relations are strained and there is little contact between them apart from a court-ordered FaceTime conversation with her daughters, Ziva, 5, and Tali, 3, every other day while they are with him. Even that is hard because Ziva doesn't like talking on the phone and I can't force her, says Veronica. Although she trusts her ex-husband implicitly with the care of her girls, the lack of easy communication means she knows little of what they do in their time apart. More than this, decisions about their care are often made that are out of her control. I once went to pick up the girls on my Thursday and was shocked to see that he had taken them to the hairdressers without telling me, says Veronica. Tally's hair had just grown long enough to tie into ponytails and now it was too short to tie up. I was devastated. On Mother's Day this year, Veronica wasn't even able to speak to the girls as it didn't fall on her court-appointed FaceTime day. Something she says she found utterly heartbreaking. And recently, her ex informed her that Ziva would be going to an after-school judo class every weekend, which encroaches on her own week with the girls. Ziva really enjoys it, so that's okay, says Veronica, but I don't like not being part of the discussion to decide what activities my own children are going to take part in. When you have children, you want to have a say in every element of their upbringing, but in my situation, that's impossible. This is a very, very, very long article, folks. I mean, I don't know. Basically, the only thing I can gather from this information, from this article, is that, yeah, these women are not happy splitting custody. They want the whole kid to themselves. But, you know, I mean, that's why these divorces and all this crazy stuff is just... I don't know. The only way to avoid this is to not get married in the first place. Then you don't have to worry about all this shared custody and all this other shit. You know, the court doesn't get into your child's life. It's a whole different story. Now, don't quote me on that, because there's probably some weird situation in which the court was in the child's life and they were boyfriend and girlfriend. But I don't have no fucking idea on that one. All I know is this, yeah, I understand how they feel, but, hey, this is what you guys asked for, you know, you got more divorces, you wanted to be strong, independent women, here you go, this is what you asked for, no, I can't spend time with my kids, I have to FaceTime my husband, no, you don't FaceTime your husband, you FaceTime the kids, so, yeah, it's just, absolutely crazy. And of course, they talk about all the other women just talking about just how miserable they are. It's like, oh, well, she only gets so much time with her kids. It's heartbreaking. Yeah, I get it. A lot of things in life are heartbreaking. So, yep, you just gotta deal with that. The request is older. I'm shocked. The request is older. I'm shocked, but I made Twitter rounds today. Haven't figured out why. Okay. All right, so that must be he was adding there. Okay, now here is something that I was going to talk. I told you guys this was going to happen. Told you it was going to happen. Women claim she was virtually groped in Meta's VR metaverse. A beta tester has claimed she was virtually groped in the metaverse VR platform Horizon Worlds from Meta, the company formerly known as Facebook. Meta revealed the incident on December the 1st, saying it occurred on November the 26th. The woman had reported the assault on the Horizon Worlds beta testing Facebook group. Sexual harassment is no joke on the regular internet, but being in VR adds another layer that makes the event more intense, she wrote, according to The Verge. Not only was I groped last night, but there were other people there who supported the behavior, which made me feel isolated in the plaza, the virtual environment central gathering space. Several encounters of online harassment, including physical threats, stalking, and repeated harassment, are on the rise, according to a 2020 Pew Research poll, with the percentage of users reporting such incidents jumping from 15% in 2014 to 25% today. While much of it takes place in social media, VR is still nascent and already an apparent venue for harassment. Horizon Worlds, operated by VR company Oculus, which is owned by Meta, is billed as a pleasant, productive digital escape, a place to create in extraordinary ways and find experiences that matter with your avatar friends. The platform currently supports up to 20 people during one virtual session. In a statement about the incident, Meta pointed to its Safe Zone feature, which allows users to place a block against interaction with other users. However, the company admitted that it needs to work on making the feature trivially easy and findable, said Vivek Sharma, the vice president of Horizon, in a statement to The Verge. Meta spokesperson Christina Milian told MIT Technology Review that users are required to complete training that covers safeguarding tools before joining Horizon Worlds, while reminders are also prompted during users' experiences. Sexual harassment in virtual reality is sexual harassment in real life, full stop, experts have said. At the end of the day, the nature of virtual reality spaces is such that it is designed to trick the user to thinking they are physically in a certain space, that their every bodily action is occurring in a 3D environment, Catherine Cross, a PhD student, researcher of online harassment at the University of Washington, told Technology Review. It's part of the reason why emotional reactions can be stronger in that space, and why VR triggers the same internal nervous system and psychological responses, she added. Those who have suffered sexual harassment in VR elsewhere say that Meta's Safe Zone feature isn't enough. Generally speaking, when companies address online abuse, their solution is to outsource it to the user and say, here, we give you the power to take care of yourself, said Cross. Meanwhile, Meta's Milian maintained that it's never a user's fault if they don't use all the features we offer, adding that they would continue to improve the platform. However, Horizon Worlds isn't the only space where alleged harassment has occurred. Aaron Stanton, co-developer of the VR game Quiver, remembers an ordeal in 2016 when a gamer, Jordan Bell, a mayor, reported getting groped in virtual reality while hunting zombies and demons in the game. What? User Big Bro, whose avatar was merely one disembodied head and two floating hands. What? Reportedly chased Bella Mayer and grabbed her chest and crotch, then refused to pull away. She cried, stop. That only goaded him on, Bella Mayer said. Quiver soon developed a shielding power gesture in which a user can cross their arms in the air, signaling to monitors to intervene. But Stanton is still haunted by what happened to Bella Mayer and wishes he had pushed for more protections. It was a lost opportunity, he told Technology Review. We could have avoided that incident at Meta. Jesus, man. Fucking insane. Now women are complaining about being groped on... they've always been complaining. Remember the chick that's writing the new woke Old Republic? Oh, yeah. I got groped in a video game. I got raped. They tried to rape me in a video game. And now, you know, of course, we got this virtual reality thing. And obviously, dude's trying to troll and fuck with her. It's like, oh my god, I got raped and groped in a video game. No! I don't know. It's pretty fucking crazy, man. It's a video game. People are gonna do stupid shit and say stupid shit. That's just how the online gaming world has always been. So, I don't know what the main goal of all this is gonna be. But it's gonna be interesting to follow in the coming years. young, unmarried, and childless couples are increasingly turning to relationship therapy. Was there a decades-long affair? Did the passion die after the baby was born and you are fighting to make it worth it work for the kids? Increasingly, the answer is no. A growing number of younger people, unmarried and without children, are turning to couples therapy to solve a completely different set of relationship issues. Arguments about why she keeps liking her ex-boyfriend's photos on Instagram, frustration over his addiction to pornography, and disagreements about whether to buy a flat together. Relationship therapists are reporting a surge in demand from younger clients, often as young as 22. Even though they have very few shared practical commitments, therapists say millennials and Gen Z are desperate to make their partnerships work, where in the past they may have walked away. Young people are more open to the idea of therapy in general and are more willing to talk about their emotional problems, but therapists also pointed to darker explanations. They say young people are more fearful of being alone. In the past, couples would walk away and could feasibly never see each other again. But now they can keep tabs on each other on social media, enabling them to spy on new partners. This has made the process more painful. The pandemic has compounded their anxiety as young people are not meeting people at parties or gatherings. Tanya Haynes, a psychotherapist at the Blue Door Practice in central London, said, "The horrors of being single emerge after a few months on apps. Dating apps are causing all sorts of problems, and I sometimes wonder how these young people will ever meet anyone. Lockdown has made them even more fearful of being alone, so they are more likely to stay. They also value the investment they've made in someone they actually like in a throwaway culture of online dating." Anjula Matanda, a relationship therapist based in Whitstable, said that inquiries for younger couples have risen by 30% over the past few years. There's more chatter about the importance of healthy relationships on television shows and on Instagram. They are marinating in that cultural soup. A growing number of celebrity couples, including the actress Kristen Bell and her husband Dax Shepard, as well as Gwyneth Paltrow and Brad Falchuk, have also been more vocal about the experiences of couples therapy, which counselors say has helped to popularize it. Okay, this isn't very long. Matanda added, "I am surprised by their emotional literacy, but they can be quite cerebral. There's anxiety about getting it right. The concern about getting it right was shared by young couples who spoke to The Telegraph about their experiences of couples therapy. One 29-year-old from London said he opted for couples therapy to examine intimacy and communication issues with his partner. "I wanted to fix the problem instead of bailing and finding a new partner because I think she is worth it. I wanted to make the relationship the best it could be. I've done a lot of personal therapy, so it was a natural progression to do it with my partner." Olivia Luna, a couple and psychosexual therapist at East London Relationship Therapy, said an obsession among young people to optimize all aspects of their lives was also driving the trend. "In the past, couples came to us in the midst of crisis. An affair or a baby was the common trigger, but the reasons for young people are changing. You will hear young people say that they want to live their best life or grow. There's a willingness to commit, but growing together instead of passing the buck." Ms. Luna said she receives inquiries from young people on a daily basis, and that half of her clients are now younger or new couples, whereas in the past they made up less than 20%. They're sometimes in the first year or two, the honeymoon phase, but they're very self-aware. They want to fix things before they're broken, but they also feel more pressure to be loved up and worry if it plateaus. Okay. So, yep, more people going to fucking counseling. Yep. Yeah, that's kind of what I figured. Okay. Texas driver who killed cyclists on cross country trek is charged, claiming he's blind in one eye. What? Texas State Trooper filed charges Wednesday against the Liberty County driver who in October hit a group of six cyclists on a cross-country trip, killing one of them. Michael Weaver, 66, is charged with criminally negligent homicide, according to Sergeant Eric Burris of the Texas Department of Public Safety. The six cyclists were pedaling along FM 787 near Rye, Texas, around 11 a.m. on October the 30th, when Weaver steered his Ford Escape into the group. Kent Wasipka, a 51-year-old cycling enthusiast from Massachusetts, was airlifted to a Beaumont hospital where he died the next day. Two others, including Wasipka's fiance, must be like an Indian name or Native American name, were also hospitalized in serious condition. None of the other cyclists were injured. Weaver told troopers investigating the crash that he was blind in one eye and had impaired vision in the other, according to a crash report. Troopers also claimed that Weaver failed to control his speed when he slammed into the group. Wasipka was the first of the three to get hit, according to the diagram of the crash. So, why are you even driving if you're that damn blind? That doesn't work. It says, Weaver told troopers... Okay, we talked about that. Weaver is facing up to 2 years in jail if he's convicted. Online court records in Liberty County do not yet reflect the charges, and it's unclear if he has been arrested yet. Wasipka and his fiance Betsy O'Brien, pushed off from San Diego on a cross-country bike ride September 13th, pedaling through the southern U.S. on their way to St. Augustine, Florida. They met up with another group on a similar trip, and the two joined to form the final group that was eventually involved in the collision. As the ride unfolded, Wasipka frequently posted updates to Strava, a digital service for logging cycling miles, running routes, and other activities. The day before the crash, Wasipka noted that he'd witnessed an increase in dangerous driving after crossing into Texas while riding a steel frame Mossy. Okay. It said, still in Texas, Wasipka posted on Strava the Friday before the collision. Worst drivers so far. Yep. I believe it. Okay, I think this is our last article. No, we've got one more. Got one more after this. NIH directors Fauci and Collins target the Great Barrington Declaration. Okay, make sure this isn't 100 million paragraphs. It's not. Okay. Included in emails obtained through a Freedom of Information Act. Oh, those are great. We saw the CIA thing with the fucking pedophiles because of the Freedom of Information Act. NIH, oh damn it, they're asking me to. Just 9 days to save the expose. Oh wow, it looks like the expose is going to die. Ouch. Well, that sucks for them. Anyway, it says, Francis Collins emailed Dr. Anthony Fauci to urge a quick and devastating published takedown of the Great Barrington Declaration authored by Dr. Martin Kulldorff, Dr. Sunutra Gupta, and Dr. J. Bhattacharya. Okay. So now I know what it feels like to be the subject of a propaganda attack by my own government. Discussion and engagement would have been a better path. On October the 4th of 2020, three top scientists launched a declaration called the Great Barrington Declaration, urging the medical community to initiate a plan of action that included focused protection. The group explained how herd immunity should be the goal and could be accomplished in a relatively short amount of time, where even the elderly and sickly would eventually be safe to come out of lockdown. The forced protection plan went against Dr. Fauci's diabolical plan for the world, and so Dr. Fauci and Dr. Collins decided to initiate a propaganda attack against the hundreds of international doctors who signed on to the declaration, the Gateway pundit wrote. The creators of the Great Barrington Declaration, Dr. Collins describes, as three fringe epidemiologists are Dr. Martin Kulldorff, a professor of medicine at Harvard University, a biostatistician, and an epidemiologist with expertise in detecting and monitoring infectious disease outbreaks and vaccine safety evaluations. Dr. Sunutra Gupta, a professor at Oxford, an epidemiologist with expertise in immunology, vaccine development, and mathematical modeling of infectious diseases. Dr. J. Bhattacharya, a professor at, I'm probably not saying that man's name right, professor at Stanford University Medical School, physician, epidemiologist, health economist, and public health policy expert focusing on infectious diseases and vulnerable populations. At the time of writing, the declaration has more than 890,000 signatories, of which approximately 60,500 are medical practitioners and public health scientists from across the world. You can sign the Great Barrington Declaration at that link. The 12 pages of emails, which includes a takedown of fringe epidemiologists, also includes emails showing Dr. Bhattacharya was corresponding with CDC epidemiologist Dr. Jennifer McQuiston from as early as the 23rd of May, 2020. He wrote, "This is not good public health. I'm very troubled this Sunday morning that there would be people who would get sick and perhaps die because of what we were forced to do. Our team has done the good work only to have it compromised." In August 2020, in response to an email regarding President Trump's remarks when meeting medical experts Dr. Scott Atlas, Dr. Bhattacharya, Dr. Joseph Latipo, Dr. Kaldorf, and Dr. Cody Meissner, Dr. Deborah Birx emailed Mark Short, VP Pence's chief of staff, "I can't be part of this with these people who believe in herd immunity." "I can't be part of this with these people who believe in herd immunity. They are a fringe group without grounding in epidemics, public health, or on the ground common sense experience." In December 2020, after defying her own travel guidelines, Dr. Birx resigned and joined an air purifying company whose products eliminate COVID. On the 8th of October, 10 minutes after receiving Collins' email to take down the Great Barrington Declaration, Fauci responds, "Francis, I am pasting below a piece from Wired that debunks this theory." Fauci then pastes this text of an article written by Matt Reynolds, Wired science editor, titled, "There is no scientific divide over herd immunity," published 3 days after the Great Barrington Declaration was launched. The article states, aside from the three lead signatories, there is little about the Great Barrington Declaration that feels convincingly scientific. In early of October 2021, Collins announced he was stepping down from his NIH role following a number of investigative reports into Collins and his underlings. A couple of weeks later, Arrest Fauci trended on Twitter as Fauci, one of the top officials at NIH, received a wave of backlash following several revelations about the agency. If Wired wishes to retain any credibility, they may be wise to publish a follow-up article retracting Reynolds, or at the very least, as the Great Barrington Declaration scientists have attempted from the outset, encourage open debate. Open debate is, after all, the scientific way. Okay. There's just a little more here. It says, here's the revelations from previously obtained Fauci emails. More than 3,200 pages of emails obtained through a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit filed by BuzzFeed News. It's another one of those they did. Covering the period from January to June 2020 provide a... Oh, damn it. They really need your help. Okay. All right. January to June 2020 provide a rare glimpse into how Fauci approached his job during the biggest health crisis of the last century, showing him dealing directly with the public health officials, reporters, and even celebrities. That's from BuzzFeed News. Fauci's correspondence from March and April 2020 obtained through the Freedom of Information Act offers a peek into his world during the frantic early days of the coronavirus crisis, the Washington Post. So these are just snippets of their information they gathered for the article. Six bombshell revelations from Fauci's emails. Town Hall read through the thousands of pages of emails Dr. Fauci sent and received about the Wuhan coronavirus that BuzzFeed and Washington Post obtained via Freedom of Information Act, so you don't have to. And here's our roundup of the best of the worst takes. And that's from Town Hall. And then finally, in private emails between Mark Zuckerberg and Anthony Fauci, obtained exclusively by the National Pulse, the Facebook founder and CEO offered to send data reports on users to facilitate decisions about COVID-19 lockdowns. That's from the National Pulse as well. Okay. We've got one more article. If I can get to it. Okay, here we go. After this, we'll do the open mic night for the people that are in the chat. Okay. It says act now. It's not even... Okay, there's my... Alright. Come on. There's some stupid ad or something that... Yeah, this kind of sucks, because there's an ad that's not letting me, There it doesn't go. Yeah. Something in early 2000s, a time of ecstasy, Little Kim, Sex in the City, and sex-positive feminism. It was not an era free of misogyny, but still there was a sense that sex was something women enjoyed, not simply encouraged or navigated. They are arguably the first North American cohort to be steeped from puberty onward in a culture that allowed for the idea that women might be entitled to and entitled to be public about their own sexuality. Oh my god, dude, this article is immense. Okay, these women are also the first to reach maturity in the age of Viagra, which initiated a cultural revolution when it first hit the market in 98. Yeah, I might have to take that if this doesn't get better. Former presidential candidate Bob Dole went on TV and made it okay to talk about impotence, which had been given a new, less stigmatizing name, erectile dysfunction. Sales of Viagra, Sildenafil, Citrate hit nearly $2 billion annually by 2008. Viagra normalized both public discussion of sexual function in old age and the idea that medical science could provide a lifetime of satisfying sex. Now, Generation X women are in or approaching menopause with all its attendant complications, which for many include the loss of the sexual desire and arousal they have always taken for granted. They are also starting to be more vocal about the toll that vanishing sex drives and medical indifference are taking, and to demand better. The force of these demands and growing interest in the field from medical researchers, many of whom themselves are themselves women of this generation, is spurring a new and far more nuanced understanding of sexuality and what may be happening when desire goes missing. Diminishing sexual desire and interest in sex and arousal, the physical changes that can happen when we are turned on, are difficult to understand and diagnose. There is no single cause and is not one type of thing. Diminished desire and arousal can be traced to everything from the psychological changes of menopause to the stress and lack of sleep that often characterize a busy midlife to iron deficiency to the side effects of prescription drugs. Yes. Yes. I'm talking about that right now. Prescription drugs can fuck you up. Like those heartburn things, which is weird. This can make it difficult for doctors to even know how to begin isolating why a woman is experiencing frustrating changes in her desire. Doctors are not often deeply educated about this subject, nor is there a formal medical specialty dedicated to its study, and many do not take the loss of libido seriously. The lack of care is further compounded for transgender non-binary, whose experiences are not generally included in the medical research that does exist about desire. Solutions for women are correspondingly difficult to come by. The few treatments that do exist are confusing, costly, ineffective, and in some cases potentially harmful. Many GPs advise women to seek out sex therapy, which, though it includes some of the most research-supported approaches available, may or may not be appropriate for their particular situations, is difficult to access, and is not a well-regulated field of practice. This interestingly low desire or arousal, that is, desire arousal that are significantly lower than one wishes, is the most prevalent sexual complaint among women. As many as 40% of women experience low desire, and up to 10% are distressed enough for it to be a diagnosable condition called female sexual interest arousal disorder, FSIAD for short. The problem isn't isolated to any particular demographic. It affects single women as well as those in decades long marriages, queer women as well as straight women, non-binary and trans people as well as cis women. It becomes more common after menopause. A 2018 survey of Canadians in midlife in the Journal of Sexual Medicine found postmenopausal women much more likely to report low desire. The effect on quality of life can be profound. One study of 1,100 women found lack of desire comparable to their toll of chronic conditions such as diabetes, asthma, or hypertension. These women were also more likely to experience depression. Some women are frustrated by the limited options available to them that they're trying anything, including unproven remedies. A recent study of women with pelvic pain, or the major oft-ignored factors that rob women of desire, found that half were using a cannabis product such as CBD oil for relief, and that, of those who weren't, 80% wanted to try one. One woman I interviewed for the article told me that she and her husband wanted to try the psychoactive Amazonian plant ayahuasca as a reset. On the internet, topical creams with questionable ingredients are available. Some Canadian providers even offer women the O-Shot, a clitoral injection purposed to boost arousal that is not recommended by the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. That's what happens when medicine has these gaps, said OBGYN Jen Gunter. These voids get filled by people who are offering an easy solution. In her 2021 book, The Menopause Manifesto, which includes chapters on libido and vulval health, argues that women deserve better. A book called The Menopause Manifesto, you would think that. Gunter is on a mission to banish stigma and misinformation around menopause and women's health, and she says that women today are more open about sexuality and hungering for real facts. The more the words are spoken, the less mystifying it is. The study of women's sexual disorders is still in its infancy, long dwarfed by the brighter spotlight on men's sexual health. A huge market would exist for an effective medication for low desire in women. But while drug companies have touted one-size-fits-all fixes, experts such as Gunter say there is no single solution to lower desire because there isn't one single problem. Change hovers on the horizon. Mindfulness therapy is developed at the University of British Columbia. I've had the most clinically significant results, in part because of their ability to ease not just low desire, but many of its causes, such as stress. Meanwhile, in the Netherlands, a small research company called Emotional Brains has two of its drugs in development could usher in a new personalized approach to low libido. The hope is that we are on the cusp of a greater understanding, not just that women are entitled to their desire, but that pop culture and politics are not enough to secure it. That to truly support women and their sexualities throughout their lives, we need to learn more, to research more creatively, and to develop a full range of treatments to address desire in all its complexities. I mean, there's more, but that's all we're going to cover here. So, yeah, I think that's going to do it for the articles. I'm going to go ahead and read the chats, and then we'll go on to the open mic tonight. All right, so going into the chat room here. Where's the Grim chat? Ah, here we are. It says, Hoshioni says, you're supposed to feel bad when women suffers like a man does. Texas have horrible drivers. Yes, they do. I remember me and a friend driving around in Texas. And, oh my God, I couldn't believe the way these people drive. I thought I was going to die. It was like, how the fuck you going on a Texas highway in a big city? It's wow. I don't even know if they follow the rules of the road. I don't know why people are driving on the sidewalk and like sideways on buildings and just, it doesn't make any sense. I've never seen people drive the way they do in Texas. Invader Tech says they'll give any dumbass a driver's license these days. I got three words for Fauci. Sad little man. Yeah, that's a good one. Hoshioni says the group who thinks they'll say, can sell you a chemical cocktail that is the same thing, but with science in place of hippie magic. And then Hoshioni, the code is more than what you'd call is more what you'd call guidelines than actual rules. And he says that's reference to traffic laws in Texas. All right, guys. Well, that would be the end of the Grim. Well, we're in the Games and Rants technically show. And hope you guys will hang out with us on the next one when I'll be with DP. And hopefully a little better on my diet, you know. Kind of want to get that diet in gear, you know. If I got to eat like this, I got to get used to it. And hopefully that'll calm my anxiety down and improve my libido so I can not have ED anymore. Because that sucks more than anything. Like, especially at my age. I'm only 36, guys. So, yeah. And it's never been a problem for me ever. So, yeah, I'm definitely saying it's got a lot to do with anxiety and definitely those fucking prescription meds. I wholly blame Nexium on it. And, oh, yeah, one of the side effects is rare side effects I just happened to get was that. Good thing I only took one of those motherfuckers. So, at any rate, this will be the Grim Lord, and I am out of here. See you guys later.